Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive.
Yeah.
Today, we are focusing our attention on an institution that many see as, well, the pinnacle of cultural achievement, the Symphony Orchestra. But we aren't just here to talk about the beautiful music itself, are we?
No, not entirely. We're diving into Dekrin Holleman's really comprehensive work, simply titled The Orchestra. And our mission here is to look at this amazing organization, not just as, you know, an artistic thing, but as a complex cultural institution. It's like a living organism that's been evolving for, what, 400 years?
Yeah, it's almost like a microcosm of Western society. You see centuries of change packed in there, technology, social structures, economics, artistic ambition. It's all reflected.
Precisely. And Holleman argues that understanding its history gives you a kind of framework for understanding how any complex, long-lasting institution manages to adapt and, well, survive. I mean, think about it. It's the ultimate study in how these highly specialized high-performance teams coordinate. The scale is just unprecedented.
Okay, so before we get into the book itself, who is Dekrin Holleman? What makes him the person to write this book?
Well, Holleman's background is quite unique, actually. He's professor emeritus of music at UC Davis. He's got serious academic chops, PhD from Princeton, known expert in French music, especially Berlioz, who is a master orchestrator himself.
Right, so he definitely has the scholarly rigor down. But you said unique perspective. What sets him apart from, say, other music historians just looking at scores?
It's the hands-on experience. That's the key difference. Holleman wasn't just buried in archives. He was a practicing conductor. He spent years literally on the podium. So that dual identity, the academic brain and the practical hand, if you will, lets him understand the orchestra from the inside. He gets the logistics, the sometimes grueling politics, and just the sheer physical reality of managing maybe 100 highly skilled musicians trying to create one single artistic vision in real time.
That grounding in actually leading an orchestra must give his analysis a very practical edge. So what's the big idea, the central thesis of his book, The Orchestra?
Okay, so his core premise is basically this. The symphony orchestra isn't some dusty museum piece frozen in time. It's a dynamic living thing that's always evolving. He argues its structure, its sound, even how it gets funded, all of it acts as a mirror, reflecting the power structures, the conflicts, and yeah, the highest artistic dreams of society at any particular point in history.
So it's like reading an institutional diary, but written in music, seating charts, and financial ledgers.
Exactly. You've nailed it. Holleman traces this whole lineage, starting from those, you know, quite intimate 17th century court ensembles under Louis XIV, where the orchestra was purely a symbol of the king's power then. And he follows it all the way through to the, well, the versatile, globalized, and often financially complicated organizations we see performing today.
So the book isn't just about the composers or the pieces. It seems like it looks beyond the notes to track these parallel evolutions happening over time.
Yes, exactly. He focuses on three key threads running alongside the music. First, the instruments themselves, you know, the actual technology of sound production. Second, the changing role of the conductor, how leadership and control have been defined and redefined. And third, the economic models, how you actually pay for this massive enterprise, shifting from aristocratic patrons to today's complex mix of ticket sales, grants, and corporate money.
Okay, let's start with those building blocks then, the sound itself. Holleman really breaks down those four main instrument families, strings, woodwinds, brass, percussion. But he stresses this crucial link between, like, engineering and artistry.
Yeah, that connection is fundamental. Composers could only dream up certain sounds once the instrument makers actually built the tools to make them. It's a constant dialogue. Holleman points to, for example, the shift from the older, maybe gentler viol family to the more powerful, brilliant violin family. That was a key moment, really establishing the dominance of the string section that we still see today. But the really explosive period of change, technologically speaking, was the 19th century.
Ah, the Romantic era, sound explosion.
Right.
What drove that leap in sonic power and complexity?
Well, technology was definitely the catalyst. We often talk about the invention of valve systems for brass instruments, you know, trumpets and horns back in the 1820s. Before valves, those instruments were pretty limited harmonically, which is why composers like Mozart used them in a more restricted way. But once they could play all the notes, fully chromatic brass became heroic, central. Think Wagner, think Tchaikovsky.
Well, suddenly you have this powerful, flexible brass section. But you mentioned woodwinds too. Valves didn't affect them in the same way.
No, but they had their own revolution, the boom system. It was this ingenious system of keys and padded holes developed for the flute first, then adapted for clarinets and others. It was based on acoustic principles, not just comfortable finger placement. It allowed woodwind players to play much more complex chromatic passages with far greater ease, better tuning, and a more even tone.
So these engineering breakthroughs, valves, and the boom system essentially liberated composers.
Absolutely. They gave composers like Berlioz, Wagner, later Mahler, this incredibly expanded palette of colors and power. They could finally realize these incredibly dense, emotionally rich, powerful soundscapes that were just impossible before.
That really reframes orchestration history, doesn't it? It's as much about engineering progress as artistic vision. Okay, let's shift gears from the tech to the institution itself. How do we get from the private court ensemble to the big public concert hall?
So back in the Baroque era, you had models like Jean-Baptiste Lully's orchestra at Louis XIV's court. That really set a template. Lully was known for demanding fierce discipline, especially in the strings, getting them all bowing together, that kind of unified sound. But it was still often built around the basso continuo, you know, that core bass line played by cellos, basses, harpsichord, or organ, with others filling in harmonies. It had a certain flexibility. Think Handel, Corelli.
Okay, so flexible, but maybe smaller scale. What changed moving into the classical period, the time of Haydn and Mozart?
Standardization became key. You had influential orchestras like the one in Mannheim, Germany. They became famous for their precision and dramatic effects, like the Mannheim crescendo, this big gradual buildup of sound. But more importantly, they helped solidify a more standardized structure for the orchestra. And critically, the basso continuo started to fade out. Composers began writing out every single part for every single instrument.
Why was ditching the continuo and writing everything down so important? Seems like more work for the composer.
It was. But it reflected Enlightenment ideals, maybe clarity, rational structure, but practically it enabled much greater complexity and control. If you want to write really intricate layered music for a large group, you need to know exactly who's playing what and how many of each instrument you have. Standardization paved the way for the massive forces of the Romantic era.
Which presumably also made the role of someone coordinating it all much more critical. Mm. Let's talk about the conductor then. How did that role evolve from, well, whatever Lully was doing?
Huh. Yeah, it's quite a journey. You go from the often quite noisy time beater to the silent maestro we recognize today. Back in Lully's day, and even later, the conductor might literally bang out the tempo with a big stick or staff on the floor. You had to hear the beat. And Lully famously managed to stab his own foot with his conducting staff during a performance, got gangrene, and died. True story.
Wow. Definitely an occupational hazard back then. Quite a contrast to the, you know, elegant, almost minimalist gestures you sometimes see today.
Exactly. The bass shift really gathered steam in the 19th century. Felix Mendelssohn was a key figure here. He really championed using a small baton for precision, conducting silently. And just as importantly, Mendelssohn kind of established the conductor as a curator of musical history. His famous revival of Bach's St. Matthew Passion, which had been largely forgotten, set a precedent. The conductor wasn't just leading new music, but interpreting the past.
Okay, so Mendelssohn brings in the baton and the historical perspective. Then fast forward to the 20th century, and we get this archetype of the maestro as, like, the ultimate authority figure, people like Toscanini.
Right. Toscanini really embodies that shift towards the maestro dictator, you could say. He was almost like the chief engineer or the visionary CEO. His whole thing was absolute fidelity to the composer's score cum scritto, as written. He demanded incredible precision and discipline, imposing his singular, intensely detailed artistic vision. This pushed orchestral playing to new levels of virtuosity, globally recognized levels.
That level of intensity, that demand for perfection. It brings us closer to the modern orchestra. Mm-hmm. And Holloman dives into the practical realities of running this complex machine today, right? It's not just art. It's labor, finance, staying relevant.
Yes. And this is where his book becomes really instructive, I think, for understanding how any large institution tries to survive. The modern orchestra is a complex social and economic entity. You've got these incredibly grueling, often anonymous audition processes just to get a job. You have complex union negotiations, sometimes leading to very public bidder strikes. It's the friction point where high art meets the realities of the modern marketplace and labor rights.
And there's that constant balancing act, too, isn't there, between preserving the past and pushing forward.
Absolutely central. Holloman calls it the tension between being a conservatory and a laboratory. Orchestras have to preserve the classical canon, the Bach, Beethoven, Brahms that audiences know and love, and that reliably sells tickets. but they also need to be a laboratory, commissioning and performing new music, championing diverse voices, which is crucial for the art form's evolution, but often carries, you know, significant financial risk. And all this while constantly scrambling to ensure financial sustainability in a world where funding sources, government, corporate, private, are always shifting.
Okay, let's try to synthesize some of this. Holloman identifies some core sociological themes that run through this whole history. The first big one seems to be the orchestra as an economic and social mirror.
Yeah, the money trail really tells a story. First, it's funded by aristocratic patronage. The orchestra is basically a symbol of the ruler's personal power and wealth. Then, with the rise of middle class, you get public subscription concerts. The concert hall itself becomes a symbol of bourgeois cultural aspiration. People buy tickets. And today, it's this complex ecosystem, isn't it? Ticket sales, government grants, where they exist, corporate sponsorships, private donations. It reflects our fragmented society where the arts constantly have to justify their value to different stakeholders, including fitting into corporate social responsibility goals. The structure always mirrors the dominant social and economic forces.
Fascinating. And the second key theme you mentioned earlier, that leadership paradox embodied by the conductor.
Right, the dictator and diplomat idea. It's such a great tension. The conductor needs absolute authority to shape the interpretation, to demand precision from 100 highly trained specialists. But success depends entirely on securing the willing, active collaboration and mutual respect of those same specialists. It's hierarchical, no doubt, but it requires this intense collective listening and responsiveness. You can't just order people to play beautifully together. They have to want to follow your lead.
That really does sound like a masterclass in managing any team of experts, actually. And the final theme Holloman highlights, that balance between tradition and innovation.
Yes, the conservatory versus laboratory idea again. He argues that the long-term health, the survival of the orchestra as an institution, depends on its ability to navigate this tension wisely. If it only preserves the past, it becomes a museum, potentially irrelevant to contemporary life. If it only chases the new, it risks alienating its core audience and losing its historical grounding. Great orchestras, Holloman suggests, find that institutional wisdom to do both effectively.
To help make these big ideas really stick, let's pull out a few memorable phrases or concepts from Holloman's work. What's one that really captures that conductor role?
Well, the one we just discussed. The conductor serves as both dictator and diplomat. It just perfectly encapsulates that tightrope walk, managing these incredibly skilled, often strong-willed individuals towards a unified, deeply felt collective goal. You need the authority, but you also need the buy-in.
Okay, and another one, maybe something about the sheer scale of it all.
He describes the orchestra as humanity's most complex form of collective artistic expression. And when you stop and think about it, I mean, the level of coordination is staggering. Dozens, sometimes over 100 specialists, each a master of their craft, performing intricate parts in precise synchronization, responding instantly to subtle nonverbal cues from the conductor and each other. It demands a level of shared focus and mutual listening that's pretty rare in other human activities.
Yeah, it really is mind-boggling when you put it like that. And the third key insight, something about its social role.
This one's powerful. The orchestra democratizes the sublime. The idea here is that these profound, transcendent, artistic, and emotional experiences, the sublime, which were once really the exclusive privilege of the wealthy elite, the aristocracy, are now, at least in principle, made accessible to large, diverse audiences in a public space. It serves this key social function, fostering shared cultural moments, communal feeling.
But playing devil's advocate for a second, does Holloman grapple with a common critique that orchestral music can still feel elitist? You know, expensive tickets, traditionally older, less diverse audiences. Is the sublime truly democratized?
That's a fair point. And yes, the book implicitly addresses this challenge. Holloman frames it more as the potential for democratization. Is there the concert hall is a public space, unlike a private court? But he acknowledges that realizing that potential is an ongoing struggle for the institution. The constant pressure orchestras face today to diversify their programming, their players, their audiences, to find ways to lower financial barriers through outreach and education programs. That's precisely the modern battleground for making that democratization of the sublime a fuller reality. It's about staying relevant to the whole society they aim to serve.
Right. It's an ongoing project, not a finished state. That struggle brings us neatly to real-life applications. Okay, so we've learned all this history and context, and how can we, you know, use this knowledge?
Well, the most immediate and maybe enjoyable application is simply enhancing your own listening experience. Next time you hear a symphony, whether live or recorded, you won't just hear, say, a soaring melody. You might recognize the discipline of Lully in the unified bowing of the strings, or hear the power unleashed by valve technology in a brilliant brass fanfare, or appreciate the agility the boom system gave the flute in a fast passage. It shifts you from just passive hearing to more active, informed, maybe even richer listening.
That's a great takeaway. And for anyone involved in, well, managing people or projects, the conductor-musician dynamic seems like a goldmine.
Oh, absolutely. Holloman's analysis of how conductors balance authority and collaboration, how they align individual virtuosity with collective goals, it's practically a case study for any complex organization. Think about managing a team of software engineers, or coordinating a surgical team, or leading a creative agency. Any situation where you need brilliant individuals to work together seamlessly towards a shared high-stakes outcome, the orchestra offers some powerful lessons in leadership, communication, and building trust.
And what about for institutions themselves? Businesses, universities, museums?
The orchestra's long history of navigating change is maybe the biggest lesson. Its relative success in preserving a core mission, musical excellence, while constantly adapting to huge technological, social, and economic shifts, offers a kind of blueprint. It shows how vital it is for any enduring institution to find that balance between honoring its traditions and embracing contemporary relevance and innovation. Stagnation isn't an option, but neither is abandoning your core identity.
Okay, wrapping things up then. As we reflect on Holloman's deep dive, what was the most surprising thing for you or the main thing you took away?
For me, I think it's just the sheer persistence of it all. The orchestra is this incredible testament to our sort of collective human commitment to creating beauty together, often against considerable odds. It's a powerful reminder that we can achieve something truly sublime, something bigger than ourselves, but only when we really commit to listening to each other and working in concert, literally. It fosters community through shared experience. Yeah, that's beautifully put. For me, the most valuable lesson is probably that idea of institutional wisdom we talked about. Seeing how the orchestra has managed to survive and even thrive across centuries, not by staying the same, but by constantly adapting, sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, to those shifting economic and social pressures, all while holding on to its essential character and its core mission of musical excellence. It really drives home that adaptability, coupled with a clear sense of purpose, is the key to long-term resilience for any organization, artistic or otherwise.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acacia Foundation.